Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. Our first guest on the line is Chris Robinson. He is one of the Summit County Council members. He's here to talk about last night's meeting. Good morning, Chris. Thank you for joining us.
How are you, Carolyn?
I'm great, thanks. So, Chris, you and Doug were two of the people that were assigned to a subcommittee to talk with the developer about the Lincoln Station project, and it appears that that has been continued again, but there were some people there at the meeting last night who had some input. The council has spent a lot of time mulling over the details in this development agreement, and I'm just wondering what mechanisms you would like to see put in place to make sure the units stay affordable there.
Well, the mechanism I want to put in place or see put in place is the strong development agreement. And a strong development agreement is one that can't be unraveled by third parties, such as if the developer's lender has, if there's language in the development agreement that says that the developer's lender can basically terminate our housing agreement in the event they foreclose. We can't be in a situation where we work hard and come up with these important deed restrictions only to have done away if the developer stubs his toe and it's a new ball game. They become market units if the lender forecloses. We just can't. That would be a terrible outcome, because the whole point of this rezone is we're going from a 4-acre tract that is good for one unit per acre. I mean, one unit per 20 acres, but it's a 4-acre tract, so it gets one unit, to 78 units and 5,300 feet of commercial property. So it's a big upzone. The reason we're willing to do it is because 2/3 of it is deed-restricted housing. But if those deed restrictions can be done away in the trustee sale, well, that doesn't do us any good. And there are things like that. We just want to make sure that it's a tight agreement. And Doug and I have met with them on two occasions, and it looks like we're going to meet again on Monday the 23rd. And we're honing in on it. If we get the finish line, which I think we will, it'll be a solid agreement.
So the developer and his wife, who were at the meeting, seemed a little worn out, tired and worn out. What do you have as far as a message to them?
Well, I think it's the same message I just gave. And the message is, this has been in our court now for less than 60 days. We're dealing with it with all dispatch. The process getting to us may have been arduous. It often is at the Planning Commission or the other things leading up to the Planning Commission. But since it's been in our court, we have dealt with it very expeditiously and are committed to doing so. And as we've told them on numerous occasions, including last night, they're sort of a guinea pig here, because we have in our general plan language that we won't upzone properties unless there's a compelling countervailing public interest. That compelling countervailing public interest, we believe one of them could be affordable housing. But it does us no good to get affordable housing that can be converted to market through a borrower's default. And other things. We just want to make sure also that the affordable units are first given, that our residents and workers are given priority first, as opposed to people commuting from outside the Snyderville Basin. So there are things like that that we've incorporated into this.
And are they responsive to the idea that you want to insulate from any type of foreclosure or financial action that could change the contract? Have they been responsive to that?
Well, they point to, you know, HUD requirements and lender requirements, and we say, okay, well, we need to see chapter and verse where federal statute allows HUD to, lend for affordable housing only to have the deed restrictions done away. I mean, this seems so counterintuitive that the federal government would, you know, they earn points for the fact that these are deed-restricted units in housing and urban development lending criteria. But then to have them have the very thing that generated the points be gutted in the event of a default, that just doesn't make sense to us. Now, that may be creative banking lobbies' efforts in winning congressional support to bad law. You know, that's happened before. But what we will be exploring in this next meeting is what the real lender requirements are, what the real provisions of the law are, and we will work to make sure it's as tight as it possibly can be within those constraints.
Okay, and Glenn Wright wants these units to have heat pumps. He says that it's a deal killer for him and that he'll vote no if they're not part of the project. Do you agree with that, or do you think heat pumps add a lot as far as the expense of the project for the developer?
I'm learning. I don't know a lot about heat pumps. I know when we were designing the Camas Library, the services building that we just opened a little while ago, when we were working on that beginning, and we had various options of we can use heat pumps. These were ground-based ones where you pump water in and out of the ground and use the earth's inherent, you know, warmness or coldness to cool and heat the building. And we determined it was too expensive for us as a government. You know, now there are also heat pumps that use the air's temperature, and apparently they work at elevation in our county. And they're a lot less expensive than drilling a bunch of wells and having pumps. I'm generally not a one-issue person. I look at the balance. So if you ask if I'm in total lockstep with Glenn on if it doesn't have heat pumps, it's a no deal. I'm not going that far. I would like to see the heat pumps if they can, and that's part of what they're investigating is can they afford to commit to us in this development agreement that there will be heat pumps. I don't know whether they're going to tell us, and we're going to decide that, and we'll evaluate, the five of us will evaluate the totality of the package, you know, once we get a development agreement that we can live with, and once we know whether the heat pumps are economically feasible.
Okay, and there is, what, about 5,000 square feet of commercial space for the Lincoln Station project that's being proposed?
5,300.
Okay, 53. And what is the Snyderville Commission's recommendation on that? Would they convert that? Would they look to convert that to residential space, or would they keep it commercial? What's the thought process there?
Well, I don't know what the Planning Commission thought, but what we said yesterday was that the 5,300 square feet is commercial space, and in the development agreement, there's a list of commercial uses. The draft of the agreement had in it that it could be converted to residential. We've taken that out. So it'll be 78 units of either townhome or apartment and 5,300 feet of commercial, and the 53 wouldn't be convertible. It'd just be commercial. And the developer says he needs the commercial. You know, that he's not asking. There was a holdover in the agreement that it be convertible. We took that out.
Okay, let's move on to the Central Wasatch Commission. You reported that they have almost approved adding the three cities to this commission, Park City, Alta, and Mill Creek. And so I guess the county representative would be you that would be on the commission representing the Wasatch Back?
Yes. What would happen is as soon as Park City has a seat in its own right, then the interlocal agreement between the city and the county would be amended to basically make it so that the Wasatch backseat is coming from the county.
Okay, and so that would dissolve basically with Park City.
Well, Park City would have its own seat, and obviously Park City is part of the county, so the Wasatch back representative, whoever it is, be it I or someone else, it would still represent the city, Park City, but it would have its own seat in its own right.
Okay, and then the meeting is coming in early August. Would this be finished and put to bed by then?
I think so. I think Jana Young said it would be something like on the 2nd of August, but I may have my date wrong. It might be the 6th.
Okay. Public comment. It sounded like you heard from several people urging the county to help develop a senior facility in the county. And the expectation, one person said, was 120 beds. What would the county do? Is there an interest on the part of the council to be part of that? And could it possibly be part of the Klein-Dolly parcel?
You know, I don't really know what the impediments to having senior housing developed in the county are. I'm not totally versed as to whether it's a conditional or permitted use in our zones. I think generally group homes, you know, like we had one along Highland Drive known as the Beehive Home, which is just 16 beds or 16 rooms, rather, that it's governed by federal and state fair housing laws that basically allowed them, regardless of whether it met our zoning or not, to come in. I am very sympathetic to the need. I'm not sure what the impediments are to it and which of those impediments are within our wheelhouse to solve. Are they zoning land use impediments? Are they economic impediments like we have in affordable housing where you can't afford to build it? Because, you know, when you add everything up, it's too expensive. I think that senior living tends, you know, I mean, there's a spectrum of economics in that demographic. Some are well-to-do and could afford to pay the freight. And, you know, if we're talking about low-income senior living, that's maybe a different story. So I really don't know, but I am very sympathetic, I think the council is, to the need and how we meet it and what we need to do as a county to help meet it. That's the part I don't know.
Okay. Any other comments about the meeting?
No, I don't think so. It was a good meeting. It was, I'm personally pleased to see this. I'd like to see some meaningful affordable housing come forth. If we can do it in the right way, this could be a nice addition, this Lincoln Station.
Yeah, and you're planning, you said, to meet on the 23rd. That's a closed meeting with the developer and you and Doug Clyde?
Yes.
Okay, and then I presume some.
And how can you argue with a name like Lincoln? I mean, that's minor. But
we don't argue with that name.
It's on the old Lincoln Highway. That's where it gets its name.
Oh, okay. That's what Bittner Road is? The old Lincoln Highway?
Just behind it, just to the north, is the old Lincoln Highway right away.
Okay. Well, great. Well, keep us posted on that. Thank you so much for calling in and giving us a history lesson at that.
All right.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Bye. Bye now. Our next guest is the new communications director for the Wasatch School District, Kirsta Albert. She's here to tell us about her new role, what to expect, I guess, what she's to expect in August when schools get back in session. Welcome, Kirsta. Thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes. Yeah, so tell us a little bit about your background and how you landed in this new position.
Absolutely. My background is in newspaper reporting. I was at the Park Record in the late 90s and transitioned ultimately into nonprofit marketing at the Kimball through the Olympics. I was at the former Park City Performing Arts Foundation until 2012, and then took over marketing and development at Discovery Gateway Children's Museum, which was my first foray into in-school programming through the ICE program, onto the Summit Group Communications for 3 years, where I worked with the State Board of Education in their special education initiatives within math outcomes for middle school students. And from there, that led me to Wasatch County School District.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so the communications director role, mm-hmm. it was originally created to manage district communications for all the stakeholders. That's including internal communications for the district, external communications to the stakeholders throughout Wasatch County. What kind of an opportunity have you had to get settled in and meet with administrators and with staff and that type of thing?
I started on July 2nd so that we could dive right in with the administrative staff that does work throughout the summer. I started by visiting each of the school properties, and they have some amazing facilities over there, particularly new buildings like Timpanogos and Daniel Summit, as well as the high school, which is just a top-notch, state-of-the-art facility for those 2,300 students. It is an opportunity that I had to go around and see what kind of facilities improvements are happening over the summer, and just to kind of get my feet wet and understand who the different players are within the community and within the county, and understanding how they would like to have their communication shared out.
Right, and Wasatch County is everyone's using that word, exponential growth over there. As a result, the district has responded accordingly in ways that address the growing pains that occur with the student base. What about school facilities? I know that there was a recent bond that was successful in Wasatch County that was able to fund building some new schools. Where does Wasatch County sit as far as its preparedness for the kind of growth they're expecting?
There is, in my experience, just in 2.5 weeks, because I am still so new on the ground. But one of my first days, I was brought around to see the existing school sites, but also potential school sites. Much like Park City, real estate is at a premium in the Heber Valley, and it is being constantly studied to determine where growth can happen in a way that is smart, where infrastructure exists already so that there aren't additional costs to that infrastructure expansion and accommodating existing school population. They were able to do that at the high school campus by moving into the adjacent building that was the middle school and use that for certain programs that allow for an almost 1,000 student overflow. That's the building next to the Aquatic Center. And it's an amazing way to see how they are currently accommodating that growth, but also planning for the future strategically and in a way that manages resources efficiently. And that is the number one goal I have found from the Board of Education, is to serve the student population and to recognize that growth is going to need to be accommodated because it's an exciting time. It is one of the fastest growing school districts in the country still. So it's something that needs to be managed, and it's being managed, from my perspective, very intelligently.
It might not be fair to ask this, but is there a number that you can put on that growth with enrollment for 2018-19 school year compared to last year?
I know the budget has accommodated for a 3% growth, but I do not have the exact figure, I apologize, for how much it's grown year over year. I do know that they're at about more than 7,000 students, including preschool, which puts it across 8 different schools. You've got some schools that are at 800 to 1,000 students with the 2 middle schools. But I have seen that they are being accommodated so well with some adjacent buildings. And then, of course, that planning for expansion. They've never started a school year with any teacher vacancies. So it's clearly a well-mapped out strategy to ensure student populations are always taken care of year over year.
Is there hiring going on there this summer?
Yes, absolutely. And they, at the last board meeting in June, the Board of Education voted to set the starting salary for teachers at more than $41,000 per year to remain competitive. And it's also of note that our school district pays full medical benefits. So that $41,000 plus is truly $41,000 per year. And it doesn't have to then account for the medical costs. So the package that is offered to incoming teachers and existing educators is significant and reflects the value that is placed on those educators.
So there's no co or supplemental payment.
Nothing.
That
is your whole nut.
Interesting. Okay. Let's talk about the priorities for the 18-19 school year in Wasatch County. Safety. Let's start off with safety, because there were a couple of incidences mm-hmm. last year that caused the Sheriff's Department, the Police Department, to get involved and to start to provide resource officers. There was discussion about permanent resource officers there. There were talks about hardening the school facilities mm-hmm. and putting in place methods and mechanisms to manage who's coming and going. Where are things with resource officers and with any kind of construction changes that maybe need to happen?
The immediate impact that will be observed is the presence of full-time school resource officers in each of the facilities in all 8 buildings. And that is a cooperative effort with Heber City Police and Wasatch County Sheriff. Those school resource officers are being hired presently. It's a very specific type of individual who is a good fit for a school population. And I know they're closer to having everyone ready. There will be school resource officers in each school by the time school begins. The other priority within safety is around what you were saying, the hardscape, right? The building itself, ensuring that entryways are secure, and that is happening at each of the buildings over the summer. And the final piece of it is, of course, mental health, and ensuring that there is an additional resource coming into the district in the form of a counselor therapist in that space. And they have hired another full-time body to ensure there's as much availability for resources for the students as possible, because mental health is equally a part that is recognized of school safety.
So is that a particular position, is it a new role for the district?
It is, yes.
Is it a high-level administrative, district-level administration?
They will report, and again, after 2.5 weeks, I hope I'm speaking from a position of authority. We have a director of special education, Ben Springer, and I know he is heavily involved. He has a PhD. He's a psychologist. I know that he is within that space to help with the school safety commission that was convened. They convened a council over the past few months to make recommendations, and he was heavily involved within the mental health aspect of that, and that's in his space.
Okay, great. And then the second priority that we have listed here is teacher pay, which you alluded to a minute ago. You've raised the base starting mm-hmm. salaries. There has been, I guess that's a difference in terms of the benefits package that are offered in other school districts in the state.
We are one of
a few.
We are one of few districts that offer full benefits paid for. Over the past 2 years, it has grown by, the overall base pay has grown by 11% for educators in the district.
Okay. And literacy is the third area that mm-hmm. you've got listed here. Let's talk about literacy, what that means.
Literacy is the overarching initiative and priority for the district as a whole. That is demonstrated in full-time kindergarten being offered this year. Not all parents are required to enroll their children in full-time kindergarten, but it is there. As the mother of a 9 and 13-year-old, my 9-year-old benefited tremendously from full-day kindergarten. It ensured that their preparedness for first grade was on track, as well as the district offering preschool for anyone who would like to take advantage of that. It's demonstrated over and over that quality education before entering grade school has a significant impact on ensuring these kids are at grade level by third grade. Third grade is that benchmark. If you're not at grade level literacy by third grade, it becomes increasingly challenging to get on grade level as you become older. And when you talk about math, when you talk about science. If you do not have the core tenets of literacy, then even if you have a proficiency in math, science, language arts, that's not going to manifest if literacy is not already achieved and that we are not making that a priority. So you will see that as the overarching priority for Wasatch County School District moving forward. And it is probably the strongest foundation for a community that has such diversity. You know, we have some English language learners. It's about a 20% population of the overall school population. And we want to make sure all students have access to the tools that they need to succeed. And within that, literacy is number one.
Yeah, the thing that I've always understood about that third grade benchmark is from childhood up to third grade, you're learning to read. After that, you're reading to learn. And it's a very critical time frame. So let's talk a little bit about the English language learners. Are there specific programs that are in place to address the population of students coming in who don't have English skills, especially as a first language?
Within my experience, having been there just 2.5 weeks, I do know that each of the 5 elementary schools does have dual language immersion. In Wasatch County School District, as opposed to some other districts, we do start in kindergarten. It's demonstrated that English language learners who participate in dual language immersion programs outperform their peers who are not in those programs in English and other subjects. So having the dedication and the commitment to having the dual immersion program in all 5 of the elementary schools is one of the ways that's addressed. Another one is the summer school program, which is just wrapping up this week. They have a 6-week summer school program that is headquartered out of Heber Valley Elementary. And within that, there are special programs for students with disabilities, as well as dual immersion, STEM. And this is an opportunity for those kids to come in and have an opportunity to not experience the brain drain that happens over the summer.
Right. And there was also an extension put in place for your student lunch program this summer. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Absolutely. That's also at Heber Valley Elementary. It goes through August 9th. We extended it by nearly 3 weeks, understanding that there are so many students whose parents work during the summer or who maybe are in a place where they need a little support in terms of nutrition. So from noon to 1, Monday through Thursday, any student can come in, regardless of socioeconomic level or if they're in the free or reduced lunch program that is not applicable this summer. They can come in aged up to age 18, and they can receive a free nutritious lunch. A parent or guardian or other adult can come in and purchase a lunch for $3.50. But we have extended that program probably further than summer school, further than a lot of the other districts, to ensure that we can bridge the gap as much as possible before they get back to school August.
What's back to school day for?
It's on August 22nd for kindergarten, August 22nd, kindergartners always start the next week. So August 22nd is first grade through ninth grade, but then 10 through 12 start on the 23rd. That gives the freshmen a day to assimilate to the high school, and then kindergarten will start on the 30th.
Okay, and preschool, you said, is being offered now in each of the elementary schools?
Yes, and I don't have as much preschool knowledge or information as I haven't met those instructors yet. And so I cannot speak intelligently to the preschool structure right now.
We'll come back to
that. Okay, I would like to come back in and talk about it.
You did fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kirsta, so much for bringing in all of this detail about what's happening in the Wasatch School District.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate your time.
Good morning. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Our next guest is the Voice winner Chris Blue of season 12. He's making his debut in Park City as part of the Big Stars Bright Nights concert series on July 23rd. Welcome, Chris Blue. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Oh, there you are. Good morning, Chris. Thank you for joining us. So, Chris, you've won the season 12. That was 2017, The Voice?
Yes.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about what winning that prestigious recognition has done for your career?
It's done a whole lot. I'm not really sure where to even begin. Mostly it's, you know, put me in the company of, you know, I have a great team, you know, supporting me. Alicia Keys, Johnny Wright, Howard Hill, Nando, On top of that, we signed to a label, which something I'd never done before. And just on a personal level, winning The Voice was a big thing for me because we finished something. Like my whole life, I had people around me, family and friends, who would be a part of different ventures, but and would do well, but could never seem to get over the hump of finishing. And so we finished, and that was like a big thing for me.
Well, congratulations. I was reading a little bit about your background. You learned to sing when you were 3 years old?
Yes, absolutely. It was my first time singing in public was 3 years old.
And what kind of a setting was that?
Well, we were in church. My family had a singing group very similar to the Jackson Five or the Jackson family. And I wanted to sing with my brothers and my mom. And I wanted to be, you know, one of the guys, but I was always too small. And one day, my mom, who was the Joe Jackson of our family, you know, allowed me to, you know, come out and like sing like two lines of a song. And when she saw the reaction of the people, she was like, wait a minute, I think we got something here. So from then on, I began singing with my brothers in churches and different events all over the Southeast region of the United States.
And are your brothers still singing?
They are still singing. My schedule doesn't permit me to sing with them at the moment. But, you know, family is forever. It's kind of one of my mottos and my slogans. So at some point, we'll get back on stage together when the time is right and make music like we used to.
So I have to tell you that some of the covers that you've performed and that anybody can go and find on YouTube are just stunning. And The Tracks of My Tears really just bowls me over. I'm wondering about, everybody listening needs to go and take a shot at that this morning because the covers are spectacular that you do. Rhiannon's Love on the Brain and Rhythm Nation, Janet Jackson, really amazing. So is this the kind of music you enjoy singing most, or is there a certain, I mean, you've sung gospel and you are doing these covers, and what do you enjoy the most? What calls to you?
You know, what's funny is it's not even about the music with me as much as it is the feeling. You know, I enjoy giving people an experience that they'll never forget. That's what I really enjoy. And if it's in Love on the Brain, if it's in the Tracks of My... It's a funny story about Tracks of My Tears. I'd never performed the song before I sang it on the show. That was the first time I had ever performed that song. And actually, it was the first time I had ever really heard of the song. Was on the show. So it just goes to show, like, you don't really, you know, you never know what works and what doesn't work until you try it. And I've just always been a believer of, you know, putting who I am into whatever I'm doing. And fortunately, you know, we were able to sing the song and it moved the people. So I don't mean to sound like, you know, like, come on, dude, that's a safe answer. That's honestly the truth. I love all types of music, but what I love more than the music is the way the music makes me feel and the way it makes people feel. So that's really what I try to go after.
Yeah, so what can people expect with the Big Stars Bright Nights concert coming up on the 23rd? What will we see?
You will see high energy. You will see, hopefully you will feel a joy and hope and you'll be inspired. I want people to walk away just feeling like they can do anything. You know, that's just kind of why I do it. So it's going to be fun, high energy. You know, we're going to party. We're going to have a good time. We might cry together. We're going to laugh together. We're going to enjoy each other and enjoy our time together. Because it's going to be my first time in not only in Park City. It's going to be my first time in the state of Utah. Oh. So I'm really excited about this. And I just hope everybody comes out. You know, tell your friends, tell your family, tell everybody you know. If you don't have a ticket, I'm telling you, do not want to miss this concert. You don't want to miss it. And if you do, the people who attend the concert will come back and tell you you should have been there. So you might as well grab a ticket and come hang out with us because we're going to have a great time.
Yeah, might as well. So where do you head after you're in Utah? Will you perform in more than one venue here in the state or?
No, after Utah, we head back east, and we have a couple performances, some more shows on the East Coast. We'll be going, Florida and Tennessee. I've got to, always perform there. Got to take it back home. So we'll be just moving around more on the East Coast once we leave you guys.
Okay, and Tennessee is your home? That's where family
that's
where is?
I was brought up. Mm-hmm. It is. I was actually born in Florida and then left Florida at around age 10. And then we all moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, and just that's where the family is and where a lot of my closest friends are. So I guess I have two homes. and hopefully by the end of our show on the 23rd, I'll be able to call Park City a home, too.
Yeah. Well, that would be great. So what about, like, the gospel music that you've done through the years? You won a voice-off competition in 2015. Was that a gospel competition of some sort?
That was not. That was a spinoff of The Voice, the actual national competition show. It was a local competition that basically wanted to mirror how The Voice, held its competition. And I went out for that and won that. But I have been a part of gospel competitions. My brothers and I, we were a part of a competition growing up, several. And we won that. We won New Artist of the Year back in 2014 for this gospel workshop that took place in, I believe it was Mississippi, and we won other gospel competitions, one in Tennessee, one in Florida, and I believe there was another one in like the northern part of America. But I haven't been a part of any gospel competitions as a solo artist. This is my first venture.
Well, this will be very exciting. We're really pleased to have you on the show, and we're looking forward to the concert on, I guess that's Monday night? Tuesday night?
Monday night.
July 23rd.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, great. Well,
Monday the 23rd.
We're looking forward to it. Thank you so much. That's Chris Blue, winner of Season 12 of The Voice. He'll be performing on July 23rd, Monday night. I believe it starts at 6 p.m. That's the St. Regis Big Stars Bright Nights concert series. And thank you again.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait to see you guys in Park City. Make sure y'all turn the place out, man. It's going to be a great show, I promise.
All right. Thanks again.
All right.
Bye now.